This week, gold futures posted their strongest showing in 4 months. Silver closed at the highest point in nearly 6 weeks on dollar weakness. The Dow Jones Industrials blasted higher by another 300 points, ending at yet an all-time record high within earshot of 16,500. Well, welcome to GoldSeek.com Radio, everyone. On this December 27th Encore broadcast, we have a medley of top guest interviews, including Dr. Stephen Leeb, Peter Grandich, Bill Murphy, and Peter Schiff. Next week, Robert Ian and I return with all new guest interviews. So on behalf of the entire GoldSeek.com crew, we want to wish you all a Happy New Year. Well, last week, Capitol Hill agreed to suspend the $16.4 trillion debt ceiling. There's currently no limit to government spending. Joining me to discuss the implications for the precious metals sector, market analyst and mining company consultant Peter Grandich, the editor of the Grandich Letter. Welcome back, Peter Grandich.
Thank you very much.
Let's begin with the government profligacy. You know, on Wednesday evening, in a last-minute compromise, congressional leaders approved the Senate deal to reopen the federal operations effective until January 15th and to extend the limit there until the debt ceiling until February 7th. Essentially, we've lost $24 billion from the domestic economy. The Fed is printing about $1 trillion per year. Mark Fauber went on record this week saying, forget QE tapering, but eventually $1 trillion a month. Well, it sounds impossible, but who'd have thought we'd be printing $1 trillion?
And we've had to raise that so-called debt ceiling an enormous amount of times, not just in this administration. However, in this administration, watch, it is accelerated unlike any others all combined. But let's understand fact. It was supposed to be there to keep some semblance of fiscal order in Washington, which fails all the time. The second thing to look at is, I think, and what concerns me most about what has happened here is they pretty well, up until this debt ceiling, could kick the can fairly easy down. There was a little concerns. There wasn't really any comment by outside parties, and they eventually would extend it and go about their business of spending more money than they take in. However, during this one, not only did it go down to the last minute, but we saw serious disharmony by some of the most important people in the debt game, the people who actually buy our debt, namely the Chinese and others, expressed serious concern about it. And then third, regarding your comment about Mark Fauber, not only was it a joke to think there would be an actual tapering, but it is true that now with the economy really tailing off here, the Fed is going to be in a position to not only not taper, but have to look at perhaps increasing easing. And mind you, where is it their job to be concerned about economics? In reality, we have not had fiscal real management in Washington for well over a decade. No one can point to me, and I'll be the first to be glad to hear, where there's been a serious bipartisan fiscal move to betterment the fiscal condition of the United States. So when you combine all these things together, one thing is for certain, the ability to kick the can yet again is now very questionable, and the exhaustiveness that we went through in the last one may actually have gotten us to the point where they will no longer be able to kick the can. So we're really shaping up for an interesting next time the debt ceiling comes, because we just don't see it being able to be just moved down the road yet again. I just don't see how they can do it economically and, of course, with any support not only in the United States but across the world.
Well, I'd add that the Fed's original mandate had very little to do with managing the economy. They were supposedly responsible for maintaining our currency, the U.S. dollar. But, you know, the Heritage Foundation agrees with you. They're calling the debt ceiling suspension merely a smokescreen that allows legislators to essentially raise the debt limit much higher by just putting a date on it instead of a dollar figure. So come January and February, as I mentioned earlier, we could see another debt crisis and potentially even another government shutdown. And, you know, they've set a precedent now.
One of the things that hasn't been asked, well, it's been asked to me and a few others, but not on the national stage on a regular basis, is what is the end result of all this? At the end of the day, How do you fix the enormous problem? I think a lot of people are starting to realize that the problem is very, very serious. But I don't think yet there's been a lot of discussion is what is the end game to eventually fixing it. Well, many will point back that the last real chance to fix it was during the last fiscal crisis when many called for, instead of all the bailouts and everything that happened, let the defaults take place then, have a very serious recession, if not depression, but could have started the motion to cleanse it out. Instead, how much more debt have we added since then? And the irony of all of it is, if people have very short memories, and that's the difficulty with the average American, the whole concept of the fiscal crisis was, at the time we was told, was if the banks aren't protected and bailed out, the whole economy will fail, and that's the reason why the bailout supposedly took place. Mind you, let's not forget that it was mismanagement by those investment houses and banks that led to the crisis in the first place. Well, where are we just 5 years later after that bailout? Those companies are gone right back to misbehaving the way they did. Just look at the news stories of all the various banks being fined literally tens of billions of dollars for misbehavior in the financial markets. So what do we get out of all of what transpired? What have we gotten out of literally trillions of dollars of new debt at the end of the day? A feeble economic recovery, if you can even call it by measurement economic recovery. And what price did we pay for that? Well, we've paid a price now to where we're getting very close to the point where I know it's not a question that we can no longer pay the principal amount, but at this rate, and particularly if interest rates rise as our creditworthiness gets called into question, I don't think America can, from a cash flow standpoint, be able to service the interest rate. And if and when we get to that point and that perception is hit, then it's a game that I don't think any of us are prepared for, in the sense that we have any real idea of how bad it's going to get or the various different avenues we can travel down. But I do say that it's going to make the 1930s depression look like a walk in the park.
Certainly starting to look that way. Cracks in the foundation. For instance, almost 48 million folks on food stamps. I think this is becoming a pretty common statistic. But you start to lose touch, I think, with the humanity of 47, 48 million people requiring food stamps just to put food on the table. On November 1st, many of those folks will see their EBT debit cards and SNAP cards begin to lose. Very few of these people are economically savvy. That's not their fault. It's just the way things turned out. And they're not necessarily going to understand the government is curtailing spending.
I think you just have to look at, in recent times, where austerity programs, which eventually America has to go in. I put up a chart of several days ago on my own blog of the parabolic rise of the debt situation. And all parabolic moves always end off in a blow-off, and then it goes reverse to the parabolic. So there's going to come a point in time when the debt levels are going to go much lower, but that's going to be through when we default, we renegotiate, and we monetize in a combination of all threes. But what will happen clearly at that time is lifestyles and standards will have to fall dramatically, and not just for a month or two, but for years, if not decades. Well, look at all the places in recent years that have tried to implement austerity programs, Greece, Europe, third world countries in the 70s and 80s. The people uprise. The people fight it. In most cases, the government caves in because they can't have the people go through the pain and suffering that really needs to happen to truly cleanse it. I don't think America is going to be any different. I don't see some universal patriotism, let me take one for the Gipper. That might have happened 40 or 50 years ago, but I don't believe the country's in a position at that anymore. And it certainly doesn't have the leadership. And I think that's the talk that hasn't been spoken enough about this recent debt crisis, is the total lack of leadership on all sides, and clearly by a president that was unable to move away from partisan politics and take control of the situation and bring people together to fix the situation. Clinton managed to do that during the budget deficit as a Democrat. Ronald Reagan was extremely good at that. The first George Bush was very good at that, too. And yet this president is just laughed at. He's even now being mocked by the very liberal supporters that drove him into office. And So without any real leadership on any side, and really a feeling of America's disgust of the politics, and I think an attitude that's greatly increasing called throw the bums out, is just not conducive for an environment with the hard decisions that are going to be needed to fix this problem eventually are in place. So it's only going to get a lot worse before it can possibly get better.
Well, speaking of getting worse, you know, the U.S. dollar fell through key support this week, dropping to the lowest level since February on expectations of further QE due to that 16-day government shutdown. The greenback, well, recently posted an ominous diamond pattern for our technical savvy folks, suggesting that a run to the former lows is a possibility. Could this be the impetus to pull the metals out of the doldrums?
Well, I clearly believe it, that has begun. The key support on the U.S. dollar index is in the 78-79 area, which I think in a matter of hours, if not a few days, we test. And if we don't break it the first time, eventually we do. We do get into a little bit of a unique situation that this testing will come as we get in towards the end of the year, where a lot of book squaring and seasonal factors impact currencies as well as other markets. So there could be an added negative from that markets become thinner as the year gets closer to an end and the market is moving lower. But there's no question that how could the dollar even be thought of rising in this situation? And with any inkling that Europe is somehow out of its worst condition and improving, combined with the United States here, is going to be the thing that tips the scales and sends the U.S. dollar substantially lower. Now, remember this part, and I don't want to take away from a question you might have had coming, but I wouldn't want to miss saying this today. We were told, particularly in the first half of this year, that gold was a sale because of the tapering, the rising of interest rates, and the strengthening of the dollar to come. Well, those things are not happening. Well, those same people that told us should be telling us now gold should be rising, but they're not, because they're just anti-gold to begin with, and that's why they used what they could to say at that point. But the fact remains is, if they were right, and in a sense they were, because if interest rates rise and the dollar rises, that tends to be at times negative. That's clearly not happening. So then the opposite should happen, and I think we're starting to see that unfold now. And while I still don't put it past the paper manipulators in the paper market to still to try to suppress and hold back as they've always done, what you and I and some others have said for quite a while continues to prove right and eventually will win the day, and that is the great strength of the physical gold market, that it will eventually overcome and override the paper market. And that's really what kept the paper gold market from truly breaking down and the manipulators winning. And now, with some renewed general interest to the gold market, I think we're going to see a movement up in both markets, particularly if gold and when it gets above 1400. I have said this for a while. If we can get a couple of days, particularly a weekly close or so above 1400, the bears are in big, big trouble, and that's where we'll see the acceleration. So I think a number for us to watch is psychologically and technically is the 1400 area on gold.
I'm a bit more encouraged lately by Russia's entry into their entry into the physical market, the Shanghai Exchange, and now gold trading on Russia's stock exchange, which is kind of a new twist. People are losing faith in derivatives in general. But, you know, I wanted to also talk about China's largest credit rating agency, Degong, downgraded U.S. debt from A to A-minus status last week. And should investors be preparing for China, Russia, and Japan to dump the remainder of their $2 trillion stockpile? And if so, what impact might that have on the markets?
Well, I think they have been quiet sellers. We've noticed a great tail off of foreign buying. Let's not forget that during the height of QE's most latest number, whatever some people say, it might have been QE5 based on some factors, we were seeing the Fed being up to 80 to 90% of all the bond purchasing. So I think they've backed off. I certainly believe now that one of the things that came out of this is they are just going to look for more alternatives or do something that I believe I've discussed with you before, and if I may, I think this is very, very important for people to grasp that this is going to happen if it's not happening already. And I'm going to use an example back during the height of the Cold War when President Eisenhower was in charge. At that time, the Egyptians decided that they wanted to build the Suez Canal and not have the Brits and France who were currently there. And the Brits and France said no, and they started to move military people into that area. And Russia started to mobilize its folks and start to move it into Egypt. Well, President Eisenhower at the time suddenly called and made an announcement that he was going to call in within 2 weeks the debt that France and the United Kingdom had owed the United States from World War II. And 24 or 48 hours after that announcement, both France and England announced that they were pulling out of the Suez Canal. And we all obviously knew that one and one equaled two there. Well, I surely suspect, even if you don't see it publicly, that China, behind closed doors, is now going to put on, if they haven't already been doing so, enormous pressure on the United States and look for concessions on enormous avenues, including leaving us alone and not trying to be a watchdog of what we're doing in China, as well as other trade factors, because of how much they control and how much the debt that they owe. But I certainly don't believe that they're going to be significant buyers anymore. I personally think they've been the major buyer of all these physical gold purchases that we've seen, but we'll never know that they have until they're basically done, and then they'll tell us. But I just think that what happened out of this fiscal crisis is we've also killed the goose that laid the golden egg, and China will no longer be a major buyer, and Japan, of our debt. And that's why, even though right now the bond market has rallied, because it has this thing in its mind, weakness means lower interest rates, eventually when the world recognizes, and people in the United States, that the United States can't keep just printing money and get so indebted, rates will rise dramatically, because that's the only way we'll be able to raise any money, regardless of the strength of the economy, and that will be another death knell to the financial markets and a boon to the hard asset market.
I think some analysts have been scratching their heads wondering why China has held on to much of its U.S. dollar reserves in the form of treasury bonds. And I think one of the reasons why they've been able to sleep well at night, if you will, is because they are importing so much gold through Hong Kong. Would you be nervous about your treasury bonds and deflated purchasing power if you were consuming nearly as much gold as India and holding and hoarding all of the gold produced by your major producers? Premiums in China and India are very solid. In Shanghai, roughly $18 over spot. India, premiums are now at an all-time high of $100 an ounce.
I just think that just continues to play into the argument that the physical market will eventually overwhelm the paper market, which we know here in the U.S. has been highly manipulated. I mean, for some of these talking heads on television to say that it's ridiculous for someone to say that there's manipulation in gold, when first we have people paying tens, if not hundreds of billions of dollars of fines for acting badly in all sorts of other markets, but somehow it doesn't happen at the COMEX is foolish. But second, just in the patterns that we saw, who in their right mind sells so much gold at one of the worst times, knowing that such a sale would make it drop dramatically, then try to feed it out and get the best possible price that a normal seller would try to do. So I think it's come pretty clear, while we're never going to see the talking heads fess up to it, but I think people in the know, and particularly people around the world who have real money, still recognize that the paper market has been artificially impacted. It's a game that's going to blow up eventually in their faces, and the physical market and what happens there on buying and selling is what really matters, and the physical market only continues to get stronger and stronger.
No, we're seeing nothing but signs of strength in that sector despite these lower prices. And as you and other guests have pointed out on the show, if we were seeing weakness in demand with lower prices, that would certainly be a red flag. This is an interesting story. I think it was actually the biggest story to fly under the radar screen last week. JP Morgan Chase notified business account holders that the bank will limit all cash transactions, including deposits, withdrawals, and ATM usage, to only $50,000 a month, and will prohibit all outgoing international bank wires. This is clearly a case of capital controls. Do you view this as a potential trial run to see how folks will respond? And could we see something similar enforced on a widespread basis?
Oh, yeah, I think it is. I have advocated, and as I've told others, as an American, it must be 4 or 5 years ago now, that the bulk of my savings outside of home and hard assets was changed from U.S. dollars to Canadian dollars and placed in Canadian financial institutions legally. It was about 2 years ago or last year when the United States implemented yet more rules and regulations on that, and I have to fill out all sorts of forms now and disclose and show statements and that avenue. I think this is just an ongoing move to, like you said, take control and impact, not just because there's an underground economy that isn't doing what I was doing and reporting and so forth, but to really control the monetary forces in the world. And so it doesn't surprise me. And the very fact that it wasn't a big kick up in arms has probably made them delighted that they think they can try more and more things like that in the days and weeks and months ahead.
I think you're right. And I'd also like your thoughts on gold backwardation. You know, until this year, gold has never been backward dated twice in a year. But as of last week, it reentered that state and it remains there today. The last time we saw an event like this, the reaction lows in 1999 and 2008 sparked new highs in the sector. From your vantage point, will this mark the bottom?
I think we've had them, because I think we've not gone back near those. I think this has been a bottoming formation, and the fact that we are in backwardation signals that, you know, physical demand is as strong as we say it is. And again, it's just another piece of the formation after a very hard correction. And it's hard for people to see that because so many of those people also have owned mining shares and all, which got decimated compared to the gold and silver pullback. But when you look at where gold and silver was at the turn of the millennium, where it went to, what we corrected back to, in a very long secular bull market, these would be just considered healthy corrections. They're never fun when you're going through them, but we haven't violated any really long-term factor in that. And again, I think we're starting to pull away to the upside here. And like I said, we're just a $60 or $70 on gold and $2 or $3 on silver from getting to levels that are really going to, I think, hurt the bears to the point where we're going to see a dramatic short covering rally that will fuel new rounds of momentum buyers and get us back on track and get us into 2014 when we start looking at a 1500 to 1550 gold price. And that's where the real challenge will be to get through. And when we get through that, and obviously I believe we're going to get through it because I say when, then we'll see the renewed true momentum. One other thing let me point out to you, very important. I posted an article in the last day or two on my blog, ran out of a New York paper here, about a study that was done among wealth management services, and that's the 21st century word that's used for financial houses. It used to be stockbrokers, what have you. And what was amazing is how many of them are now switching and saying, hard assets need to be substantial parts of people's portfolios. And I'm celebrating almost 30 years in this, and this is the first time I've seen the general Wall Street firms talk about hard assets in a significant way. So I just think all the ingredients have come together. It was really hard going through this, and, you know, it still lingers, so we don't feel safe yet. But I think all the things are pointing to a much better market.
Precious metals equity sector certainly seems to agree with your improvement hypothesis. We're starting to see several stocks come to life, many of them making our stock pick lists with these discounted prices. You also have improved financials. As we wrap up here, I'd also like your thoughts on gold manipulation. I know that this is something you watch very closely, and you have some strong opinions about the powers that be and some of the manipulations that are apparently going on behind the scenes to suppress the price of gold and silver.
Well, I've been most disenchanted and, quite frankly, angry with the gold mining industry. You would think a group that really depends and should prosper with higher metal prices would see the enormity of circumstantial and sometimes hard evidence of it and try to support any group that was trying to show it for it. And one I always think of is GATA. And yet, I think 99 point something of the industry has not done that. And shame on them because they don't realize that by allowing it, they've cut their nose to spite their face. I think the second thing to recognize is that unfortunately anybody that was anticipating that we would get regulatory actions really lost any faith in that with the recent ruling by the CFTC. I mean, they did word it in a way that people pick up that there wasn't enough evidence. They didn't say they didn't see any. They said there wasn't enough evidence. I think that was an all behind the scenes thing, part of the settlements that are coming out with these companies now that are announcing tens, if not $100 billion worth of fines, and you know, with some sort of promise, okay, we won't do it. Just kind of look the other way, and we'll walk away from it. And then when the regulators walk away, they'll go back to doing what they do best. But the bottom line is, whether or not there is a degree of manipulation, whether or not it's controlled by a group of people, or it just happens to be people taking advantage of situations, the bottom line is, at the end of the day, you said it earlier, the physical market is overwhelming it. And eventually, physical markets decide really which way markets go. And through all this, people have been buyers on weakness, not sellers on strength. So I just think things bode well for the market going forward.
Very good. And could you please tell folks more about what they can find at the Greenwich Letter?
Greenwich.com can see our comments about the markets in general and some of the clients that we represent on the juniors. Thank you very much.
My featured guest today says that China holds over $1 trillion in U.S. debt, and this could be a big liability for our nation and a potential threat to the financial system. Dr. Stephen Lieb has over a quarter century of investment experience and is the author of 7 books, including his latest titled Red Alert. Welcome back, Dr. Lieb.
Well, thank you so much, Chris. It's always a pleasure to talk to you.
It's great to have you back. And, you know, let's kick off the dialogue today with the $1 trillion of our debt owed to China. You've gone on record noting that this could lead to some economic trouble down the road.
You know, the debt per se, yes. There's no secret that China has, accumulated massive amounts of reserves. It's not just the $1 trillion in U.S. debt, but it's also nearly 3 additional $1 trillion in other reserves. I think China right now has about $3.7 trillion in total reserves. Yes, I believe that it's a major issue that China does have so much of our debt, but I don't think that is the major issue. That's part and parcel of a mosaic of issues surrounding China. I think the largest of those is that China appears to be, at this moment, certainly growing faster than we are, and I think more governable than we are. You know, what I'm more alarmed at recently is watching the behavior of our dollar, not just against the yuan, which has been soaring, but against the euro. The euro it's a currency that collection of countries all use, and among those countries are such disparate names, at least in terms of their politics, as Greece, where you have a right-wing revolt, extremely right-wingers protesting, and France, where you have extreme left-wingers. And the economic bloc itself, the euro, the European countries, are basically not showing much growth outside of Germany. And in fact, outside of Germany, it's doubtful that they're showing any growth at all. This is a mess by any standards, by political standards, by economic standards, by standards of living, by governing standards. It's a mess. Yet, it's a currency that is outperforming our dollar. And that, to me, is really, really worrisome because it suggests that people are losing faith in the world's reserve currency, which is the dollar.
It is troubling for the greenback, and we've seen the U.S. dollar struggling lately. You know, it made several attempts over the last 3 years to break out. It had every opportunity to recover. From a technical perspective, I know our technically inclined listeners and savvy folks are probably wondering as well, you know, why didn't the dollar rally? As all these deflationists who are expecting this incredible greenback rally, and we've seen a breakdown from an ominous diamond pattern, which Edwards and McGee lists as one of the most troublingly bearish patterns.
That's very interesting. I think that it is very troubling. And, you know, against the kind of political background in Europe, to see the dollar falter is just, you know, it's extremely troubling. What it's saying to us and what the world is saying to us in the way the world talks, that is with money and where they're placing their bets, is that they're not comfortable anymore or really comfortable anymore with the U.S. as a reserve currency. And they're becoming less and less comfortable with that. And the problem right now is that there's really no alternative. I mean, it's too, you know, it's a 300-pound man, or as Neil Cavuto put it, a 400-pound man versus a 500-pound man. Who should run the race? Well, neither one of them are going to run it very fast, but I guess you'd have to bet on the 400-pound guy, knowing nothing else. And, you know, we're sort of the 400-pound man, and fortunately our major competitor is a 500-pound man. That's no way. That's not a good way to run the world. That's not a healthy situation for, you know, the world, for everybody. Therein comes gold. Gold is a very viable currency. It has been. Its metal has been tested, no pun intended, over the past, I don't know, millennia. You know, this is a cliche. Gold's been around for, you know, as long as we've been trading in things. Gold or silver or nickel, some metal has played a major role. The dollar is very, very new to the game. I think, and this is what is happening, I think, is that it's in no one's interest right now, right at this moment. It's in really no one's interest, by no one, I mean East and West, to see gold really take off. Certainly the West is scared to death of gold, because if they see gold take off, if investors see gold take off, it's going to create an avalanche of support for gold. Because it will be recognized then, hey, this is a currency. This is a currency I want to have. And once that happens, and once gold, you know, starts gaining traction as a potential currency, then you're going to see the dollar really going to be in for troubled times. You know, it won't be long before you see critical commodities priced in terms of gold or some basket of currencies in which gold plays a prominent role. And this is where China comes into the picture. I'm not telling anybody, saying anything anybody doesn't know, because it's been reported in the news. China continues to purchase through Hong Kong about 100 tons of gold a month. They also produce, I don't know, 40 tons a month or something like that. I'm not sure. So they're basically accumulating, 1,700 tons a year. That's what we know about. But there are other ways and other places that China gets gold, too. I mean, now they have, you know, active ETFs in China, et cetera. China is waiting, in my opinion, to A, their markets get a little freer, and B, that they have enough gold on hand where they can say, hey, we're now the big boys in town. If maybe not worldwide, but certainly when it comes to Asia, when it comes to the Middle East, it's our currency, it's our basket that is going to be the denominator for oil, for other kinds of commodities. And when that happens, it's lights out. I mean, figuratively and literally for the U.S. And, you know, I will say, you know, as a citizen of this country, as someone who has a couple of kids, this makes me really upset. This makes me angry, and it makes me extremely sad. I thought that this last episode in Washington was the worst I've ever seen in my lifetime. But to see 18 senators vote against opening the government, and much more important, voting against a debt ceiling that could have, if we did not raise it, led to total economic chaos. It certainly could have been the death, immediate death, of the dollar as a reserve currency. Didn't necessarily have to unfold like that, but it could have. And to see the majority of Republicans in the House of Representatives vote against raising the debt ceiling, and then see that the alternative wasn't, well, okay, we'll pass a debt ceiling and extend it for the next 2 years. No, we're extending it for the next few months, and then we're going to do it again, folks. Then we're going to do it again. And who knows what happens next time this thing occurs. Now, just step back in history just a little bit to the mid-90s. You have a very liberal Bill Clinton as president. Bill Clinton gets his head handed to him in midterm elections in the 90s. Newt Gingrich et al. Seize control of Congress. Sweeping, massive victory. The government eventually shuts down. They can't come to any agreement. They hassle and bargain and fight and everything else. Then they finally come to an agreement. And that agreement, which didn't involve dire circumstances, this one, that agreement was ratified by the Senate 100-0, after which Gingrich and Clinton got busy and passed a lot of legislation. Both of them decided after that that they better call themselves Americans, not necessarily Republicans. I mean, obviously they stayed Republicans and Democrats, but above that, rising above that, was the sobriquet American. That's what they were. at that point. I don't see any trace of that now. I see rancor and anger on a level that I have never seen in my life in this country right now. It's very, very upsetting. It really is discouraging. I mean, let me just tell you an anecdote, because it really kind of got my attention. And I don't like to deal in anecdotes. I like dealing with a lot of evidence. But I have an eye doctor. I'm not going to mention the name of the person. But this person is a very excellent eye doctor. Someone, I don't know, I would guess early 60s. Very, very solid. I mean, children went to Ivy League schools, etc. And I would say left-leaning, if anything. She likes John Kerry, as an example. The other day, I went to her for an appointment. And she said, you know, before you sit in that chair, you know, the chair where they measure your vision, just sit across from me for a second. I know you're in this business. I want to see what you think. And she said, I'm really worried. I've never seen a situation like this. And this is from somebody who has, you know, seen a lot. She said, what do you think? And I said, you know, Dr. So-and-so, I tend to be bearish on America now. I hate to tell you this, but I'm really worried. I'm upset. I'm upset for my children. She has children that are about my age, too. And she said, I agree with you. And then she went on and she said that this fighting, this rancor is something we've never seen. We have no statesmen in this country. The day before that vote was cast in Congress, you had your president out there telling everybody how horrible the Republicans were. Well, he may or may not believe that. He may believe it. But, you know, that's a time when you know you've won. You say, it's great, we're all coming together as Americans. You don't say, it's great, I've beaten these horrible Republicans. That's not the thing to say. I mean, the divisiveness, and I'm not blaming Obama even. I'm just blaming the anger that is out there, the lack of basic civility. I mean, when civility goes, so does civilization. Someone once told me that. And you're starting to see that. And it's just really, really upsetting. And I think people should take this more seriously. I mean, if it doesn't involve writing your congressperson, you know, that should be, you know, first step. But you should also, I think owning gold is a necessity. I don't know when it's going to go up. Again, I don't think it's in the interest of either, certainly not in the interest of the West for it to go up. And the East may not have accumulated enough yet to really let it fly, but it's going to happen. And I think it's a must own for everybody out there. I really do. I don't know how much you should own, but you have to own it when you just look at what's going on out there.
As Gerald Celente says, I think so euphemistically, when people have nothing to lose, they lose it. You know, you also note recently that the stock market rally may be little more than an illusion resulting from massive Fed stimulus, and navigated over to the St. Louis Fed website, and it showed a shocking number approaching $4 trillion on their balance sheet. You know, the last time I checked that was only seemed like a few months ago, and it was at $3.3 trillion, increasing at an almost parabolic rate. And at some point, there's going to be a bill that's got to be paid here.
No, there absolutely will. You know, there'll come a point where people will just say, you know, I don't want the dollar. I mean, I can't trust these people to, you know, pay their debts. Who's going to, you know, own dollars? Are you, if you're a foreigner, are you going to buy a dollar if you know you're not going to get paid off for buying it? You know, seriously. I mean, it's that simple. These are not difficult equations. These are not difficult concepts.
Peter Grandich and I were discussing this yesterday. When will China dump these treasury bonds? Japan owns just slightly less. You're talking in the neighborhood of $2.5 trillion at least, and that's on the low end. Why would they be worried about their treasuries when they're importing so much physical yellow metal through Hong Kong into mainland China? And they're holding on 100% of what they're producing.
They're also importing from other places, too. I mean, the Hong Kong numbers are there because they're official, and Hong Kong is, you know, more or less a city-state, though it's controlled by China. It's still a city-state, and they have their own reporting, et cetera. But, you know, China has ports that people just don't follow, and there's gold that comes in there, too. So we really don't know how much gold China is importing, but it's a big number. It's a very, very big number. And they're not doing it so that everybody in China can, you know, have gold rings and gold jewelry. They're doing it because they realize that at a certain point, the dollar is just not going to be a meaningful reserve currency, that gold is going to have a major role to play, and that they want their currency to have a major role to play. And, you know, right now, China's trade with the rest of the world is roughly on a par with the U.S., which is it's amazing. That's a remarkable kind of accomplishment. But it's going to continue to rise, but it's not going to, you know, dramatically surpass the U.S., I don't know, for a while. But in order for China to speed up this transition to one in which the dollar is no longer the reserve currency, may still have a role to play, they are going to have to do it by virtue of their being able to say, hey, we've got a tremendous amount of gold that we're going to back our currency up with. And then the dynamics of the game really do change. So this may take place in parts, in stages, but it's going to take place. And it's, I can't guarantee anything in this world, but my strong feeling is that the recent shenanigans in Washington have speeded up dramatically the Chinese timetable.
It would only make sense for that to be the case. We're looking at a January and February cutoff where we could be very easily back into that rancor, that political wrangling on Capitol Hill. Once again, we'll be facing a potential government shutdown because they didn't actually put a dollar figure. There is currently no debt ceiling. I haven't seen a lot of media sources address this. They just put a timeline on it this time. And, you know, the Heritage Foundation picked up on that. And I mentioned this yesterday on the show, so forgive me, listeners, but this was a way to circumvent a debt ceiling, and it could be setting a dangerous precedent.
But yes, what's happened is dangerous. I mean, when you see that big a chunk of the Congress voting in favor of an action that is very perilous, catastrophic, extremely perilous. I've never seen that. Never in my life have I seen that. I just think that the reactions in the market are, you know, basically telling you the same thing. No one's seen it. And yes, the stock market's on a tear because you've got tremendous liquidity in the system, But that's not changing the fact that median incomes in this country, real purchasing power for the median income person in this country, has declined this century. It's down probably 5 to 8 or 10% since the beginning of the century. Chris, I don't think that there's ever been a time where we've had such a protracted decline in real purchasing power than we've had since the beginning of this century. And I'm including the Depression. I don't believe that it lasted that long during the Depression. It was steeper, but it was not nearly as protracted. This is something that we probably haven't seen since Thomas Jefferson started Declaration of Independence. It's very worrisome. And, what makes it really worrisome is the fact that there just doesn't appear to be any pro-growth talk out there. I mean, I did hear Trent Lott the other night on the radio, and he's never been somebody I would have voted for, be very honest with you. But, I mean, he made tremendous sense to me. He said that, you know, America has to come together and start, you know, advocating pro-growth. There's no sign that that is happening anywhere. It's just the opposite. It's, you know, the word of the day is, you know, get your opponent. Beat him. Beat him into the ground. Beat him into the dirt. And that's no way. We're all on the same team. It's not like one we're in, you know, there's a yellow team and a white team or a blue team and a green team. I mean, it's not like the Yankees versus the Dodgers or the Cardinals versus the Red Sox, as the case may be. This is not a sporting event, guys. We're all Americans. We're playing for America. You know, yes, you can have different views and different ways of approaching it, but just like if Gingrich and Clinton can come together and pass a whole bunch of legislation, I mean, it can be done. But why aren't we doing it?
But remember, originally, it wasn't that way. Originally, it was, we shall hang together or we will surely hang separately. United we stand, divided we fall.
Yeah, well, that's it, yes. Those cliches nail it. They're exactly right.
Exactly. And I wanted to shift gears, though, a moment, if we could, over to the precious metals. You know, I came across an interesting media source this week that showed that roughly 10 billion ounces of silver were available above ground in 1950. Fast forward to today, less than 1 billion ounces of silver, but over 6 billion ounces of gold. So if you look at it not from a production standpoint, but just available ounces, it would seem to imply that 10 or 15 to 1 gold to silver ratio might reestablish itself at some point.
You know, it could, yes. It's certainly possible. But the ironic thing that silver has going against it, and it's not a reason not to own silver. I would certainly own silver. I think it's, definitely going to do extremely well. But, you know, it's an industrial metal, and it's a critical industrial metal. It's needed for photovoltaics, which has started to really take off, just started. And I emphasize started because it got tremendous room for growth, and silver is vital in there. Because silver is so vital in so many different areas, I mean, it's the best thermal conductor, the best electrical conductor, et cetera, it probably will not ever be, you know, a major monetary metal. It will be a monetary metal. It'll be, you know, they'll take it in return for goods, but it will be gold that will be the monetary metal. And if you're hedging, not hedging, if you're protecting yourself against the demise of the dollar, I think gold would be my first choice at this point. Happy to have silver, too, but I think gold is really the place to be.
You know, another interesting anecdote, Mr. Greenspan, the former head of the Federal Reserve, published a new book that he's quite concerned about the possibility of double-digit inflation. The former Federal Reserve chairman, who had somewhat similar outlook on the markets and the economy, I think you might agree with the current chairman, Bernanke, is concerned about inflation. I mean, I wonder, could this lead to tapering, or are they simply, have they painted themselves into a corner?
I don't think it'll lead to tapering. I think that right now they've painted themselves into a big corner. And I think that, you know, what you're seeing is that all the money in the world really can't get the economy up to speed. It just becomes just lost. It, you know, gets stuck in the stock market and it doesn't get, that doesn't find its way into the real economy. And that eventually it will. And eventually, when it does, Greenspan could be right. And maybe I think we will be in for a bout of tremendously high inflation. But, you know, the catalyst, it could be, you know, strength in the real economy that really, you know, makes commodities move dramatically higher. Or it could be the fact that no one wants the dollar anymore. And things start being priced in metals and other currencies. And that would lead to wild inflation in this country.
Well, the only question remaining is when can we expect that interesting precious metals book we've been anticipating?
I'm still working on it, but I you know, I don't feel any pressure because I, you know, even with gold at 2000, I think the bull market will have just begun. You know, I've got the outline more or less done, sort of just waiting for when I think people are getting a little bit more interested in gold, and, you know, then I'll find a publisher and you'll see it.
Very, very good. Well, we're going to look forward to that and having you back on the show.
My pleasure, Chris. It was a pleasure being with you today. Thank you very, very much.
Dr. Bernanke's predecessor was recently announced. My next guest says that the new chairwoman will not only refuse to taper monetary stimulus, but might even open the liquidity spigots further. Peter Schiff, president and chief global strategist of Euro-Pacific Capital, author of several best-selling books. Welcome back, Peter Schiff.
Thanks for having me back.
Let's begin with the soon-to-be-appointed new Fed head, Dr. Janet Yellen. You've gone on record recently noting that investors should discount the possibility that the Fed will curtail the $85 million monthly quantitative easing program, noting further that the QE is now more likely to even be expanded. Currently, the Fed is adding about $1 trillion per year. How do you expect the new chair to push the stimulus process?
Well, you know, I think that we are on the verge of reentering statistical recession here in the United States. And normally, when we go into recession, the Fed starts cutting interest rates to try to stimulate the economy. Problem is, rates are still at zero. They never raised them. We've never had a situation where the government was not able to engineer a recovery with cheap money, so that normally by the time the recession starts again, the next one, they've got rates up at 5 or 6% and they have plenty of room to cut. But the next recession is going to start with rates still at zero. In fact, I think the next recession is going to start before they've even begun to taper. So what then would be the Fed's response to a recession when it can't cut rates and they're already doing QE of $85 billion? The only thing they can do is decide to increase the size of the QE, maybe $150 billion, maybe $200 billion a month. I think it's going to be all in, you know, when it comes to QE. And that's, you know, it's very bullish for gold. And it's amazing, you know, right now gold is trading as if the crisis is the debt ceiling. And that if we raise the debt ceiling, the crisis is over and gold's going to go down. I think once they raise this debt ceiling, that clears the way for higher gold prices, because the only thing standing between gold and higher prices is the debt ceiling, because the debt ceiling would mean no more debt, no more big government, no more spending. Washington would have to act responsibly. Those are negative things for gold. What gold needs is reckless spending, borrowing, and money printing. And once they raise the debt ceiling, that's what we get.
We were talking before the show, 47 million people on food stamp programs. As you mentioned, one of the highest unemployment rates in history. I mean, we're nowhere near the Fed's targeted 6.5%. And I think that was kind of a lowball figure. I mean, 6.5% is not an unemployment rate to be proud of.
Well, especially when most of your unemployed have left the labor force and now they're collecting disability instead of an unemployment check. And so they're not being counted as being unemployed, but their only disability is that they can't get a job. But it doesn't count as being unemployed. And the inflation rate is an even bigger problem. And, you know, the gold, when it managed its big rally from 300 or under 300 to closer to 2,000, 1,900, it did sell an environment where most people believe there was no inflation. When we start the next recession and the Fed really, you know, increases the QE, there's going to be inflation. And the government's not going to care. Janet Yellen is basically going to say, 4 or 5 or 6% inflation, that's an okay trade-off to grow the economy and create jobs. She might try to say, since we had 1% and 2% inflation for so long, it's okay to have 5 and 6% inflation for a while just to even it out. But when the government's numbers, the CPI is showing 5 to 6%, inflation is probably at least 15 to 20%. And these are going to be extremely bullish environments. I mean, you've seen nothing yet when it comes to where gold is going to go, especially with Janet Yellen at the Fed. And I know a lot of people, including the president and the media, they're all praising Janet Yellen for, you know, warning about the housing bubble and the financial crisis back in 05 and 06. They might as well have just given her the Nobel Prize now instead of Robert Shiller, who barely warned about anything either. But at least Shiller talked about real estate prices being too expensive. Janet Yellen, on the other hand, in 05 and 06, thought the real estate market was healthy, thought it was justified by the fundamentals, and was predicting real estate prices to keep rising. I mean, she was completely clueless. The only time she talked about a housing bubble in 05 or 06 was to talk about why there wasn't a bubble, to try to dismiss the concerns that other people were raising. It was the exact opposite of what the media says. Janet Yellen was just as clueless about the housing bubble and the impending financial crisis as everybody else on the Fed. And all the praise and all the accolades that are now being directed at Janet Yellen, because supposedly she was the one voice that was warning about the crisis and the housing bubble, it's all a lie. None of it is true. In fact, I recorded a video blog which had a couple of bugs in it, so we're trying to fix them. It should be up on my website before the end of the week. And I go over her speeches, Janet Yellen's speeches from 05 and 06, and I prove conclusively that not only didn't she think there was a housing bubble or a financial crisis coming, but she was trying to downplay the concerns that others had. So watch it. It's going to be on my Shift Report video blog.
You know, I think the walkaway point here, you know, the king is dead, long live the king. We're going to see more and more of the same stimulus and quantitative easing and whatever moniker you want to tack onto this, printing mountains of money. And eventually, I think we're starting to see signs of this, cracks in the bond market. The Fed is going to have to monetize much of the debt, the treasury bonds outstanding.
But they're going to be monetizing even more and more, because we all want to avoid default, right? I mean, the president says, everybody says we can't default. Well, the alternative is that we print. So it's either we default on our debt or we inflate it away, but we can't repay it, right? So it's one or the other.
I'm sure many folks saw that in parts of the country, the EBT system that essentially runs the SNAP food stamp program in the United States, nearly 48 million Americans now depend on this to put food on the table. Apparently, that broke down due to some supposed glitches in the system this weekend. Was this a trial run? Many people dismissed that and poo-pooed the idea. And then we find out just about 5-10 minutes ago, breaking here, that the USDA has announced that they will be curtailing the system if the Congress fails to pass a debt ceiling this week. Come November, as many as 50 million people who depend on food stamps will find exactly $0 transferred to their EBT cards. After having seen what happened in Walmart's emptying of the shelves this weekend when the EBT cards came back online, people were panicking before, during, and after the event. And I'd like your comments.
Yeah, well, you know, the Walmart situation just shows you the basic dishonesty of people when it comes to government welfare programs, because there, people took advantage of Walmart's willingness to accept the EBT cards, even though they couldn't verify the balances, and basically the stores were looted by, you know, EBT holders who, you know, basically just feel entitled. The whole entitlement society that we've created basically blurs the rules of private property and turns everybody into criminals. Everybody's a thief because everybody feels they have a right to take somebody that belongs, something that belongs to somebody else, as long as the government does it. And so once they've, you know, they've destroyed the concept of private property, And so then people are just a bunch of criminals, and they're going to seize that opportunity. But, you know, I'm reading these stories now, more scare tactics about why we have to raise the debt ceiling. You know, Americans are going to have no food for Thanksgiving. 50 million Americans won't be able to get turkey in November because they're not going to have their food stamp cards. So we better raise the debt ceiling. It's just another thing. You know, we're going to default. We're going to do this. Everything's going to collapse if the government can't borrow more money. It's impossible for the U.S. government to live within its means to just spend the tax revenues. If we can't spend a lot more than we collect by borrowing all this money, then everything's going to implode. But, you know, that's an admission that it's all going to implode eventually anyway, because we cannot keep this up. The idea of leaving the debt ceiling in place means we have to deal with these problems today. If we raise the debt ceiling, it just postpones the day of reckoning to some future tomorrow. But when we do that, because the problems are so big that we don't want to deal with them, that we want to kick the can down the road, so we raise the debt ceiling so that we don't have to deal with the problems, all we do is make sure that when we do deal with the problems, they're much bigger because we've allowed them to get bigger because we didn't want to deal with them and suffer the pain, but now we have to suffer even greater pain in the future because we're dealing with an even bigger problem. And that is what Congress is going to do, and the president, by raising the debt ceiling.
Of course, this is a big media circus right now, but ultimately, they have no choice. They're going to have to come to some solution. It may not be what either side wants, and the rancor and wrangling will continue.
You know, I think they're more likely, because they think it's going to be such an Armageddon if they default even for an hour. But I don't think it would even make a difference. I don't think there'd be a big drop in the bond market. I mean, if you were going to dump your treasuries based on default, you should have already sold them, because default's inevitable eventually. I don't think the Chinese and the Japanese would immediately try to unload their bonds the day after we went through the debt ceiling. So I think this is all a phony crisis. The real crisis is going to happen down the line, whether it's in 6 months, a year, 2 years, I don't know. But it's not going to be because we don't want to take on more debt. It's going to be because we can't take on more debt because nobody will loan us the money. That's the crisis, the lending ceiling. When it's a choice between default or printing, that is when it's going to hit the fan, and we're going to have to do the right thing. Default is not positive for gold. Default would mean that we've taken the fiscally responsible tract. That, you know, default means less borrowing, less government, less spending. These are not things that are bullish for gold, and the default means less inflation. What is bullish for gold is that we never default. The most bullish thing for gold is that America never defaults. It just destroys the currency instead, because those are the choices. So if we don't default and we just keep raising the debt ceiling, then we're going to have bigger government, more spending, more money printing, more inflation, and that is the ideal atmosphere for gold. If we default, the debt that hasn't been defaulted on, I mean, maybe if the government were to default, you're going to destroy all those treasuries. They're not going to exist anymore, right? So if you inflate, then the bondholders still have an asset they can sell and buy gold with, right? If you tell your creditors you've got nothing, you know, we're giving you nothing for your treasuries, what can they do? But if the Fed is printing money and the Fed says, we'll buy all your treasuries from you, we'll just print money, well, now you can take that money and buy gold, which is exactly what you would do.
According to the Bureau of Labor Statistics inflation calculator, gold still has a $2,400 inflation-adjusted price when we look at the 1980s peak. Silver, $142. I think you could make the case that those are actually kind of tame figures. Just looking at the 1980s peak, I'd like your comments on what our official inflation numbers say the price of real money should be.
I think it should be a lot higher than $1,200, $1,300, you know, where it's been trading. No question about it. I think gold should already probably be closer to $5,000. But, you know, it's going to go there. It's going to go there very quickly when it does. I mean, you've just got so many people that really have absolutely no idea what's about to happen. They have no basic understanding of the United States, its true fiscal position, the value of the dollar, They have no idea. They actually think the U.S. economy is recovering, that the Fed can shrink its balance sheet. When they realize that the Fed can never shrink its balance sheet, that it is committed to permanent QE, that the U.S. economy is never going to be any better than it is now. It's just going to keep getting worse. The national debt's going to get bigger. The labor force is going to keep shrinking. Then this whole thing is going to implode. And if you don't already own gold, it'll probably be too late to buy it because you'll probably be too scared to buy it because the price will be rising so rapidly. I mean, and maybe you'll get some, but you're not going to be able to get that much because you're not going to be able to afford it because the price is going to be so much higher.
All right. I'd also like your comments on the central banking disaster we're seeing around the world and even in the United States. We had several presidents that warned about this initially and then throughout the generations. Of course, originally Jefferson, Madison made very stern warnings and comments about lost purchasing power, deflating the dollar, and central banks, particularly central banks. And then, of course, again with Jackson, Andrew Jackson, who was the central bank fighter, and then again with Abraham Lincoln. I'd like your comments on just what these leaders and politicians saw.
No, well, nobody seems to grasp the concept. I mean, they've all got it backwards. Again, everybody is acting like the crisis is this debt ceiling. No, the crisis is the debt. That's why we have to raise the ceiling, because we're broke, because the whole country will implode if we can't borrow more money. But that's an admission that we've already borrowed too much. If we need more debt to sustain the economy and to prevent it from being the next Great Depression, then that's an admission that we're in over our heads, that we already have too much debt, and all we're doing is delaying the day of reckoning, which is all we're doing. And the truth of it is, the real crisis, the real crash, when it happens, is going to be much worse than what everybody is contemplating is going to happen if we don't raise the debt ceiling.
Almost every week we hear of either another nation or another municipality that has written into its lingo noting that the taxpayer or the account holder is on the hook for any and all rehypothecation of the institution or even the nation itself. We just saw Poland announce to its pensioners, we're going to take half your funds. We're not going to offer any compensation. Does that mean that every account or anything that's not nailed down is subject to confiscation other than precious metals?
If you put your money in a bank and the bank fails and you have a savings account or a checking account, you deserve to lose money. You put your money into an insolvent institution. They took reckless risks with your money. What I think is worse is when the government uses taxpayer money to bail out depositors at insolvent banks, because now you're punishing people who didn't even make the mistake of opening up that bank account. People have to be responsible with their own money. And I think that this is a positive trend where governments aren't going to say, we are going to insure everybody's bank account. We're going to make sure that no matter where you put your money, no matter how reckless the bank is, that you're going to be made whole if that bank fails. So put your money into any bank you want. You can get all the interest and other perks of a risky bank. And then if it fails, we're going to bail you out. No. But I think if people start to realize how much risk there is in the banking sector, then that is going to be a problem because, you know, the banks are insolvent. The reason people do put their money there is because they don't care, because they think the government's got them covered. When they realize the government doesn't have them covered, they're going to think twice about where they put their money, which is a good thing in the long run. But in the short run, that'll be very problematic for these institutions that won't be able to hold on to their deposits. When will Americans realize? Right now, Americans are being told, don't worry, your money is safe. We'll bail you out if your bank fails. But the government doesn't have the money. In fact, if the debt ceiling isn't raised, technically, and a bank fails, there's no money in the FDIC to bail that bank out, right? They'd have to let the depositors lose money. But what ultimately they're going to do is they're just say, look, we're going to print the money. We're going to make sure nobody loses anything. How much was in that bank? Roll it off the printing presses. But then the money's not worth anything. So people are going to have to figure out one way or another, if they've got money in the bank, they're going to lose. They're either going to lose their money or their money is going to lose its value. But either way, they're not going to be able to buy anything with their deposits because their deposits are gone or their deposits are worthless. And when people figure out that's the position we're in, they're going to be scrambling to buy real stuff. You think they scramble to buy food at Walmart? Wait till you see how fast they scramble to buy gold. Food goes bad. Gold doesn't. Gold's a permanent store of value.
Tell folks more about what's going on with Euro Pacific Capital.
Sure. I mentioned people be on the lookout for this video blog I recorded that we'll be putting up on schiffreport.com, which is my YouTube channel, just really exposing Janet Yellen, definitely listen to my radio show. I talk about all this stuff every day at shiftradio.com. Just go there any time of the day to listen for free, or you can listen live and call in from 10 a.m. to noon Eastern time. It's on Internet, Schiff Radio, schiffradio.com. If you're interested in buying precious metals before the price goes up, you talk to my brokers at Euro Pacific Precious Metals. Also, the website is schiffgold.com. We got great deals on bullion, bars, and coins. We don't have big markups. We don't high-pressure you into numismatics and then overcharge you. So it's a great way to get into gold and silver. In fact, if you are thinking about buying gold and silver and you want to know what all the pitfalls are, you can get my special report at goldscams.com. You just go online, goldscams.com, and download that report, and then you'll know what to be on the lookout for. If you're shopping around for gold, you'll know the most popular ripoffs out there, because unfortunately there's a lot of unscrupulous metals dealers. So there's that. And then, yeah, my brokerage firm is Euro Pacific Capital, europac.net, for people looking to build diversified non-U.S. dollar portfolios. We also run a family of mutual funds through Euro Pacific Asset Management. The limit now on my funds, you can buy my mutual funds with a minimum investment of $2,500. In fact, I just launched my gold fund, which I think it's a great time to buy, because now it's actually down. It came out at $10. It went up to over 11, and now it's back down at just over 9. I think it'll be up today because the gold stocks are rallying. And it's interesting, too, that big seller came in this morning. You know, there's just somebody that keeps hitting the market in the mornings, and they don't really seem to care what price they get. So it seems like somebody's been trying to drive the price of gold down. Because normally, if you have a large order to sell, the objective is to get the best price you can. So you work the order slowly, you use a limit. This guy keeps coming in and hammering the market before early in the morning and just bashing it down. They tried that today. They got gold down about $15-16. Now it's up $10. So it's had, you know, almost a $30 intraday rally. You know, they tried to knock it down. So, this could be a pretty big reversal day, especially if this continues. So, the Europac Gold Fund, you know, a good thing to buy right now.
No, I think it's a great point. And, you know, James Turk told us last week that the London backwardation numbers, we've only seen it backward dated three times during the bull rally here. Once in 99 at that 250 nadir. And then again in 2008 at the lows, we were backdated very briefly. Well, this time we experienced, you know, roughly a month or two of backwardation in September. And according to his work, I mean, this means that the powers that be, the smart money, they're accumulating right now. And they're using all of this weakness as a great launch pad to much higher prices. Peter Schiff, we want to thank you for your time today, and I wish you continued success.
Thank you, and good luck, continued success with your show as well.
Bill Murphy is at the helm of the Gold Antitrust Action Committee, GATA, with Chris Powell working on behalf of investors to expose the powers that be manipulating the precious metals market. Welcome back, Bill Murphy.
Great to be here, Chris. Thank you.
We've seen this debt ceiling situation apparently resolved, at least in the near term. I don't think they seem to be too convinced that, or investors at least, that this is a solution to the problem. Any comments today?
Well, probably just the one that almost everyone else would be making is that, you know, it's kick the can time. I mean, that's the term of the moment, and it's true. I mean, what's changed? I mean, our debt's going up. We're spending more money. The economy's not doing that great. The PPT is goosing up the stock market to make everything look fine. Gold cartels continues to cap the gold price. Even though we had a big early day today, they stopped it cold after the first 25 minutes. Business as usual.
But at some point, there really has to be, I think, a return to the fundamentals in the precious metals.
Yeah, well, of course, that's where we would come from a GATA standpoint. I mean, these markets are ridiculous in terms of gold and silver, how artificially low the prices are. Anybody who watches these markets knows what's happened since mid-April of last year, and actually all of last year with these waterfall, what I call financial market terrorist attacks, where gold is hit with thousands of contracts in seconds and minutes, and forces the markets down and gets the speculators out, and no other markets trade like this. I mean, people are talking about, some people that follow it, about these market collapses that are forced. I'd like to see someone say, how come no other market trades like what's happening to gold and silver? It's, as you're saying, the fundamentals, it's all out of whack. They couldn't be more bullish. They've been bullish all year in this down move.
It seems like there's just been a shift away from the investment du jour, whatever is hot at the moment. That really is providing long-term investors an opportunity to pick up discounted precious metals.
Well, of course, you know, we both think the same way, but at least, again, the prices were forced down here. And you look at, has there been a let-up in the quantitative easing? No. It's got the S&P went to an all-time high today. Euro a year ago was 129. It's 136. What does gold do? It goes down $500. It doesn't make any sense unless you understand, quite frankly, where God comes from, this gold cartel and has gone after the gold and silver markets to bury the price for their own agenda, and it's worked.
Gold premiums in India hit a record of $100 an ounce. You know, the nation has done what it can to support its national currency, the rupee, by apparently suppressing gold imports. But I just keep looking to the day when Americans wake up to the diversification aspects alone of having some of the yellow metal.
I mean, you know, it couldn't be from the average investor, especially the little guys, not some of the real big money. Gold is off the radar screen as much as I've seen it in 15 years. There's just no interest, and part of that's because what they've done to the Dow. You've got real estate moving. You got the NASDAQ going nuts, the S&P at all-time highs. Gold and silver keep getting killed. All rallies are sold because of what these people are doing. And so people just don't want to hear about it right now. I've never seen it this bad. And we know why, and is it going to change, and is it the time to buy? Absolutely. These are giveaway prices, and it's going to be spectacular. And we just don't know what's going to change the sentiment or the momentum or what black swan event or something that's going to surface that'll just shake people up. And that's when the American public comes our way, and they're gonna, when it does, wow.
You know, that's a seamless segue into something that James Turk said on Gold Seek Radio last week. He watches the London backwardation numbers on gold. It's only been backdated twice since this bull market began in 1999, and it was recently, this summer. Well, you know what? It actually just fell back into backwardation this week for the second time this year.
That was the stress in the system, Chris, and it's because of what this gold cartel has done to mobilize enough physical gold from different areas to get in the market, and they're stretching to get it. And that negative rate or that occurrence by itself, it just tells you there's stress out there, and the physical gold market is a lot tighter than the price would suggest.
They bought a big break this week, Capitol Hill to the rescue, you know, the debt ceiling and whatnot. But at some point, I think this game of musical chairs is going to stop. You know, we're all going to need a hefty helping of this sector, you know, in the portfolio. So as we wrap up here today, you know, surely we're probably getting close to some support.
Well, today, you know, Chris, actually, you know, gold had it shot up like crazy. In that aspect, it was a great day in the early going, but of course it was stopped. What we need is something. Tomorrow, for me, will be key because they tend to attack gold and silver on Fridays. They do it like 90% of the time, and that's what the track record shows. And they never allow follow-through. They never allow excitement, all kinds of things. Gold needs a big, or silver, a big follow-through up day on a day like tomorrow after a move like today and not get stuffed, which these people always do. We need the market to tell us that this turnaround is here because it's coming. I don't know whether it's going to start tomorrow, next week, or whether it's going to be months from now.
We just found out that Russia is going to start trading deliverable gold contracts on its stock exchange. That's kind of an unusual twist. I think they have learned quite something from their southern comrades that they need to have a deliverable contract on their exchanges from the Shanghai Gold Exchange, which has been a wildly successful contract. And I think it's interesting that the Shanghai Exchange delivers something like 9 times more gold than the COMEX, even though it's a tiny fractional volume exchange. So just more people waking up to that value there and the opportunity for precious metals.
As I mentioned earlier, a lot of the buyers here run away from the gold and silver markets in the West. I mean, they're just saying thank you very much over there, and they continue to buy, and that's where the gold's moving to, and it's going to be a big deal in the years to come. We're not quite there yet.
Presenting opportunities, and this is the thing that folks are going to recognize, you know, why didn't I pull the trigger? On, you know, you can always dollar cost average into weakness. Can you tell investors more about what they can find at La Metropole Cafe as well as Gata.org, please?
Well, I write about the gold and silver markets. People can sign up for a 2-week free trial. My colleague Chris Powell right now just gave a big speech in Australia at a conference over there, which I hear from the feedback went very well. And he just left New Zealand, and he's going to be in Australia for a little bit longer for another conference. And he's done yeoman work to get the Gatto message out there, and we're going to keep at it.
Very good.
Thank you, Chris. Bye-bye.
Hi, Chris. John from Downers Grove, Illinois. Great show. I listen to it every week. I just wanted to comment on last week's interview with Peru Saxena. I've heard him numerous times on Financial Sense Online. He usually seems like he's a real cut-in fella. He knows what's going on. But I think he really got it kind of wrong on that call. It seems like he's looking in the rearview mirror. And I've also noticed that a lot of pundits, they buy into the baloney that this is the new normal and that the Fed can do whatever it wants. It's totally in control, and that they're going to have plenty of warning before the wheels fall off this thing. Okay, well, I got news for you. With interest rates at near zero, the Fed has no maneuvering room, and in fact, the Fed has lost control of interest rates. We all know that. So, I say that those people are whistling through the graveyard, and this thing's getting ready to implode. But having said that, we also must acknowledge that these bubbles can go on for much longer than anyone can imagine, especially as Peru pointed out. If perceptions are that they have everything under control, then the speculators, the wild men, will go wild. I fear that there is a black swan out there waiting for us, and it's a lot closer than anybody thinks. And I hope that that black swan finally puts the nails in the coffin of gold and silver manipulation, which we all know is going on. Anyway, that's it. Great show. Keep up the good work.
Hi there, John. You know, Peru is a first-class analyst, top-notch money manager. His macro picture is usually spot on, but as a money manager, he does not have the luxury that we as long-term investors have to weather a 2 or 3 year downdraft in the sector. If he stays in sectors that are out of favor, he'll simply lose half of his client book. Instead, he's going to watch the trend like a hawk, and the first signs of weakness, his clients are on the sidelines. You know, it's an excellent strategy for a professional, but for most investors, well, we're simply not hardwired to implement such a system successfully. Keep in mind that the moment that gold and silver reenter a bullish trend, Peru and many thousands of his money manager friends and associates will deploy billions of dollars into the precious metals sector. I think we've already seen some signs of that early this week. Now, this will in effect be, I think, the mirror opposite of what occurred over the last couple of years as millions of people simply became bored by the price action, and they'll suddenly chase the next investment du jour. Gold backwardation. We discovered James Turk was one of the first to bring this to the spotlight. And of course, just a month or so ago, we reentered backwardation on the London Exchange for the first time since 2008. Well, guess what? As of Monday, October 15th, we reentered backwardation again, twice in 1 year now. The topic of gold and silver backwardation, I think, has caused a lot of confusion among many folks. And so we'll cover it here just briefly. Backwardation in the metals market is a counterintuitive situation where investors are willing to pay more today for gold than in the future. So despite the additional storage costs, investors are desperate for gold right now. Of course, I checked the figures that corroborated James Turk's idea that in 1999, only 2 days, that was September 29th and 30th, were backdated. Then again in 2008, only 3 days for only one or two contracts deep. That brings us to this July 8th through September 12th. We had 2 months of very deep backwardation. Anyone that has been around the markets for at least a decade knows that it's, I think, careless, though, to base investment decisions on a single indicator. However, when we add the backwardation concept to the repertoire, it does suggest that something big is stirring in the markets. Keep in mind that although the backward-dated event marked the low in 2008 and 1999, it did require about 2 years of backing and filling before the new highs were reached. So I think caveat emptor for futures and options buyers. This is a long-term indicator, not a timing indicator, and only one more feather, I think, in our collective caps. Also, I'd like to add that I created, from a basic script, a stock valuation calculator accessible to all of my Alpha Stock newsletter subscribers. You can punch in virtually any of 20,000 stock tickers, some indexes, and even some mutual funds. It accesses all of the key statistics and summary statistics, and then calculates a forecast based on Warren Buffett and Benjamin Graham's stock valuation formulas. Many hours of programming and calculations, not to mention considerable research on finding formulas that actually worked well across the board. I think folks should be very pleased with it. I certainly am. I use it every day when I'm looking for potential candidates. Also, we've got about 22 winning charts that I've put up for folks to see just how well the Alpha Stocks newsletter has outperformed on average 30 to 100% returns in the last few months, whereas the Dow has only recorded about a 3% gain. So it's anywhere from 10 to 20, even 30% better than the index. So we're quite pleased with that. For complete disclosure here, the NASDAQ, of course, has outperformed the Dow substantially, and many of these stocks are listed on the NASDAQ exchange. So that is an important factor. But still, we have far outperformed the indexes, hopefully something that many people are getting a lot of benefit from, at least their portfolios. All right, so back to the caller's question. You know, when you called in, it wasn't really known that Dr. Janet Yellen would be the new Fed chairwoman. Well, on Tuesday of last week, it was official. She will take over the reins from Dr. Bernanke, and she's expected to be very dovish, as folks know by now, which should bode well for the equities markets, and particularly for gold and silver in 2014 and 15. As for your black swan idea that you mentioned, I think we are seeing at least a gray swan in the form of the looming debt default. I won't go into too much detail, since they did come to an amicable solution, apparently the Senate, on Wednesday of this week. If the U.S. does default at some point in the future, though, on its debt, I mean, this would obviously foment a huge sea change across the globe. Even though it will likely be micromanaged by the Fed, the default will trigger, I think, the next wave lower in the U.S. dollar. If the greenback then eclipses the previous lows, well, a huge wave of selling is likely, and it would send, of course, the precious metals back to their former highs. Closing down the phone line and reaching into the mailbag. First up, Rick says he's in the early stages and he has lots of questions to learn about the precious metals market as well as solar power. He wants to know if there's a starter book or a forum that I could recommend to get started. He says the YouTube video I sent over to him seemed advanced, and he would like to have something a little more simple. First of all, I'm glad you sent in your message. There's plenty of literature online for free. I mean, if you're not familiar with electricity, though, and electrical safety precautions, I'd recommend using standalone solar at first. For instance, we have many solar-powered devices. For starters, we have a solar flood lamp, which floods the area if there's any motion at night, as well as we have solar flashers, and then we have a solar audio voice that does a strobe light and says, warning, warning, intruder alert. We also have a solar-powered electric fence. So these are just a few, actually, of our solar devices. I actually have at my table now Texas Instruments solar-powered calculator. And would you believe it's been working for over a quarter century? And it has been working without pause for over a quarter century thanks to those little solar panels. So I recommend just start off with standalone solar. Read everything. Read voraciously. You'll need to learn about Ohm's law, which basically states that volts times amps gives you watts. So for instance, if you have, let's say, 12 volts by about 8 amps, and you're going to have about 100 watts. So there's much to learn here, but safety is very important, especially when you're dealing with electricity. There's so many ways to be injured. There's a lot of great starter kits on Amazon.com. Next up, Kenneth is disgusted by an article from the Center for Public Integrity regarding Richard Fuld, the former CEO of Lehman Brothers, ex-Wall Street chieftains living large in post-meltdown world. And basically, it just goes on to say that none of the top banking CEOs or senior execs were prosecuted. You know, Kenneth, I think this is not really my area of specialty. I will say that the current corporate structure is a bit feudal. I think most people would agree. You have a group of overlords and then Ronin who oversee legions of peasants and hoi polloi. I think an overhaul of the system is a must. I mean, perhaps regulators could learn something from the success of the former Axis powers, their corporate structure. In some European countries, workers and society come before profits. And I think that this delicate balance is really important in the workplace. However, I am convinced that if executives earned more reasonable wages, a more harmonious balance would unfold. And I am skeptical regarding this brain drain concept. You know, the idea that we want the best CEO, and if we don't pay him enough, he'll just go manage another company. You know, there's plenty of sharp MBAs and executives out there who are hungry and could do, I believe, just as good of a job. This is, I think, the argument that made investment banks like Goldman Sachs and JP Morgan that they make, where if they cap salaries, the top minds would jump ship and simply open their own outfits. You know, this is always a risk, but I think compensation comes in many forms, not always monetary. So thanks, Kenneth. All right, coming up after the break, more GoldSeek.com radio. We want you to stay with us.